Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website. And I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 71. I'm recording it on Wednesday, January 7th, 2009. The PE10 level today is 15. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The title of this podcast is, I Was Wrong. The bull market started in 1975, not 1982. I was wrong. You're not allowed to say that if you give investing advice or if you even just report on developments in the investing field. You're not allowed to say you were wrong, Rob. Come on. Nobody's going to listen to somebody who acknowledges that he got something wrong. No. You don't. You're not an expert. You're not an expert if you do that. Rob, come on. Well, I think I was wrong. This is going to be a fun podcast, I believe, because it's something totally fresh. It's not something a lot of the podcasts that I do, I have a long list of topics, and something comes up that forces me or encourages me to jump on one of those topics and talk about it. But this is one that was totally unexpected. It's one where I learned something I was not expecting to learn. And so I find that exciting. And it's one where there are no final answers, really. I'm going to present different points of view and I'm going to slant things a certain way. I'm going to say what I think. But reasonable people can offer differences of can offer reasonable different perspectives, and that makes for a fun topic in my mind. I like topics that don't have closure. I like topics where this is what's his name, Big Money Jim, is one of my friends at the Goon Central board, and Big Money Jim brings this up from time to time. He'll say, Rob just likes the process. Rob likes to talk about this stuff, and that's so true. He's saying it as a criticism. Big Money Jim doesn't like process. Big Money Jim wants to know the answers. But I like, you know, of course, if you know the answers, you know the answers, and that's, you know, that's fine too. But I enjoy thinking about these subjects. And so I don't feel a particular need to know all the answers. And I don't think it's healthy to feel a need to know the answers. That's where dogmatism comes in. So I do like process. And I like topics that don't have closure, because they allow different people to feel that they are free to raise different viewpoints. This topic is the result of a comment made by a poster at the Bogleheads.org discussion board. The poster's name is DDB. DDB. And the thread that I'll be reading from is dated Friday, January 2nd, 2009, and the topic of the thread is, why is it often said that the bull market started in 1982? This is a question raised by DDB. I'm going to read the comments here, which are good. A couple of them I disagree with, but most of them I think are good points. Then at the end, I'll give my thoughts, but I just want to start by saying I think I lean towards agreeing with DDB. I think he's making a very good point. Some of the other points need to be taken into consideration in order to have the full picture. So he doesn't, you know, perhaps I wouldn't agree with him 100%, but I agree with him more than I disagree with him. I think he's raising something very important. And I have certainly always heard that the bull market began in 1982 and continued through the end of 1999. DDB is saying no. He's saying the proper way of thinking about it is the bull market began in, or the bull market, yes, the large bull market began in 1975, not 1982. Well, that's a big difference. That's a 7-year difference. Have you, if you've listened to other podcasts, you know there's a podcast where I say the state of knowledge of investing today is primitive. That was I did an entire podcast on that topic, and I've raised the point on others. And boy, could you possibly prove it any better than to point out that there's a thread on a discussion board in which people are debating when the bull market began? This is, what, 75 is 30 years ago. More than 30 years ago. And we still don't know whether that was a bull market or a bear market. We can't reach agreement on it. We've got different viewpoints, and they're reasonable different viewpoints. They're not crazy people. This should give you, you know, everyone's thinking, oh, I want to be invested in stocks during a bull market. We don't even know what a bull market is. And to give you another indication of how pathetically primitive our understanding of stock investing is today, I saw this thread. I take a quick look at the Bogleheads board most days, not quite every day, but most days. Usually I don't have time to dig into too many threads, maybe one. And I saw this thread and I thought it was curious. I looked at the opening post and you know what I did? I did what a lot of people do with my stuff. What a lot of people do with my stuff is they open it up and they say, this guy's saying things that seem off the wall and he can't be right. Can't be right. All the experts say it can't be right. And that's what I did with DDB. I apologize, DDB. But the first time I looked at this, I pulled it up and I said, it's interesting, but it can't be right. So many people have said it began in 1982. This can't be right. And of course, I've said it myself because I presumed that those people knew what they were talking about. What made me go back to it is that John Walter Russell and I have developed a number of calculators. We have three calculators at our websites. John's website is early-retirement-planning-insights.com. And we've developed some calculators together, and we post the calculators at both websites. And I hope that we're close to finishing work on the fourth calculator. It's called the Buy and Hold Reality Checker. Very exciting calculator. It's been long delayed. I hope it's going to be finished in the early months of 2009, but we'll see. But on the hope that that's going to be finished, I've been toying with the idea of a fifth calculator, and I would like to do something relating to the subject of this podcast, something relating to price changes and what they really mean, and something that would help us clear up our misunderstandings about that. So a day or two after I looked at this thread starter and then shut it down, I was toying with the idea of the calculator, and a thought hit me, wait a minute, maybe it would help to go back and look at that thread and educate myself a little bit. Duh. It's always nice to be educated, isn't it, when you're offering investing advice? So I went back, and my eyes popped out when I actually read the thread, because what I did was I read the thread, and then I said, hey, you know, I believe in PE10. This is my valuation tool. The only way to answer this question is to go look at Shiller's database on PE10. I looked at the PE10 numbers, and the PE10 numbers, I think, agree with DDB's point. Not 100%, but I think, I would say 80%. They agree with DDB more than they don't. And so I am persuaded by those numbers that DDB is on to something important. But see, that's how you learn. And that's why I titled this podcast the way I did. It's got to start out with the words, I was wrong, because the point I have made in the Retire Early and Indexing Discussion Boards for 7 years now is the learning process begins with those words, I was wrong. I hope you're listening, John Bogle. I hope you're listening, Bill Bernstein. I hope you're listening, Scott Burns. I love you guys. I want you to learn. You gotta say those magic words to make it happen. Rob Bennett's take. All right, let's look at the thread. Here's what DDB says. He says, 1982 to 1999 seems to be universally regarded as a secular bull market. I agree with that statement. If you look at The S&P 500 total returns from the 7 years leading up to 1982, 1975 through 1981, you'd find an average annualized return of around 14.1%. Yeah, there was high inflation, 9.1% annualized CPI, and high risk-free rates, 8.5% annualized during this time. But still, a high positive real return for stocks and a high positive equity risk premium. So, why isn't the secular bull market considered to have comprised 1975 to 1999? That's the whole thread starter. Now, another point I want to make here is I have argued for the value of discussion boards in learning how stock investing works in the real world. Boy, does this thread ever point that out. I read articles by experts, just like everybody else does. I have never seen anyone raise this point. Now, I don't doubt if I did a search of everything on Google, I'd find something. But I learned this from looking at a discussion board. And I don't think most of the people on this thread, or most of the people that read this thread, have seen this discussion. It's not a live controversy in the literature. Perhaps there's someone who's looked at it, but in general, it's not a big controversy, and it should be. DDB, whether you agree with him or not, he clearly makes a reasonable case. It's at least, I don't think you can argue that he doesn't at least make a case. So this is the value of discussion boards. And my favorite thing at discussion boards is when people drop the pose that they are quote-unquote experts and ask basic elementary questions, because this is where all our weaknesses lie. All of the weaknesses in the investing field are at the elementary level, the ABCs. That's where our understanding is so weak, so pathetically weak. And that you'll see that on discussion boards. When the dogmatists calm down a little bit, the average posters will come along and ask these basic questions. These are the questions people want answers to. And so this is how we learn. And so you can't learn this, you know, reading the experts. You've got to get down into the real world, and discussion boards are wonderful for that. So I not only want to applaud DDB, I want to applaud, you know, bogleheads.org and all discussion boards in general for generating this insight that I feel I have learned something from. Another point I wanted to make is that this is a discussion of numbers, this entire podcast, and I am not the guy to go to for numbers. If what I say makes sense to you, you know, I'm happy. But my understanding of numbers is always something less than top notch. So if John Walter Russell's listening in, and I think he usually listens in, if he's listening in and he sees some errors in what I say, I hope that he will put a post up at the blog and I will be sure to, you know, let everybody know about that. And if others are listening in and they see errors, of course, I always am grateful if people do that. Because all I can do is give my best take, and we all have our strengths and our weaknesses, and numbers ain't my strength, okay? All right, that's the kickoff. He's saying, see, now one point I want to make here also is that, and then we'll go on, but he says, you know, some of the numbers here make me a little uneasy. When DDB says, if you look at the S&P returns from 75 through 81, you'll find an average annualized return of around 14.1%. Well, something that jumps out at me is he doesn't say an annualized real return. Well, that makes me very nervous. We could advance knowledge of investing so much if people would just agree to use a standard language. Everybody that you read plays with the definitions of the words and phrases they use, and that's why you can't make any sense out of what's being said. That's why our knowledge is so pathetically primitive. Everyone should refer to real returns. If he's giving nominal returns of 14%, you know, that's not the same thing as a real return of 14%. We need to know. And he doesn't say one way or the other. The fact that he doesn't say real makes me think he's using nominal. But, you know, you never feel 100% safe in making that statement because you don't know for absolute sure. And people play games with that. Just, you know, whether it's intentional or not, I can't say. But what I can tell you is If you try to learn about investing by reading the ex, don't think the experts are above this. Don't think Bogle's above this or Bernstein or, you know, any of the others. They do the same games that everybody else is doing, and I see it all the time. It makes it impossible for the average person who doesn't have an entire lifetime to devote to this stuff to make sense of it. I try to always use real returns. I try to use annualized real returns. Even I am probably not perfect on this point. And there are some times when you can't do the right thing because you're quoting what somebody else says and you have to quote what they say accurately. And they were, you know, playing games in a way, and it makes it hard. And if you always translate everything into the way it should be done, it's hard to communicate with people because people are used to hearing it another way. And so it makes communication hard. So I try to use the standard way of doing things when possible. And when it's the standard way is just so misleading that I can't stand it, I'll switch to my own language. You know, when I use the phrase buy and hold, I mean something different than the conventional approach. I mean buy and hold, stick to the same risk level, not stick to the same allocation, which I think is crazy. But that's what most people mean when they use the word buy and hold. And it's a misnomer because you're not buying and holding if you're sticking with the same allocation, because if you're sticking with the same allocation, your risk level is jumping around like crazy. So is that buy and hold? Sure doesn't seem so to me. So it makes communication difficult, but I don't think DDB did that intentionally. He's just, you know, I don't think that, I presume he's using nominal returns. And so the real return, and it appears from comments below that the real return was much less. But still, I think DDB's point is very well taken. As we move on, I hope you'll see why I think that. All right. There's a comment from Ziggy29. He says, most likely it's because there was a bear market in 80 to 82, which saw the S&P 500 drop by 27%. And that ERS inflation, add that ERS inflation into the picture, and you have a market down 35 to 40% in real terms. I don't think that could be part of a secular bull market. Well, that is surely a valid point. However, I think that DDB is more right than Ziggy29 is. I've looked at some numbers, and there was a drop, it's true, from, certainly from January of, I have some numbers from the January of each year. I wanted to focus on 1 month of each year rather than look at every single month, which is just overwhelming. And there certainly was a big drop from January of 81 to January of 82. And that probably is the reason why people consider this part of the bear market rather than part of the bull market that came later. But I think what's being overlooked is the importance of dividends. There was a drop in the S&P price in 80 from 81 to 82, but dividends were very high at this time. Because when valuations are low, dividends are always high. When valuations are high, dividends are always low. Because dividends are stated as a percentage. And so as the valuation level goes down, and these were rock bottom valuation levels, these valuation levels were half of fair value, 50% of fair value. So that means the dividend level was double what they would be at fair value. And, you know, from 82... from the low point on the bear market, the P/E 10 level was about 7. At the high of the bull, back at the top of the price bubble in January 2000, the P/E 10 level was 42. That's a difference of 600%, roughly. 7, 14, 21, 28, 35, 42. 600%. So that means, you know, the dividend level was essentially cut to 1/6 of what it was over that time period. So another way of saying it is that the dividend level was 6 times higher than what we became used to or accustomed to back at the top of the bubble. So you know, at the top of the bubble, we became accustomed to the idea of thinking about stock gains coming through price increases. But most stock gains do not come through price increases. Two-thirds of your long-term stock gain is going to come from dividends. So even in a time period where there was a drop in the S&P of 27%, that doesn't mean it was a bad time to hold stocks. I don't think it was a particularly good time that 1 year. But with the dividends coming in, that price drop wasn't so significant. And DDB is making a point not about 1 year, not about 81 to 82. He's making a point from 75 to 82. And from 75 to 82 appears to me to have been not a bad time to hold stocks. I think DDB's point is a good one. But I'm glad that Ziggy made his point as well. Certainly that point needed to be put forward. So that was also a helpful comment. Then DDB comes back and says, perhaps my problem is I'm looking at things on a calendar year basis, but I see the S&P earned real returns of 16.74% and negative 13.82% for 80 and 81, respectively. So he's saying 81 wasn't so hot, but 80 was good. All right. And he does say there he's using real returns, which is helpful. Then Ziggy comes back and says the 80-82 bear actually ran from November 80 to August 82. Well, here we have another problem with language, another problem with communication, another problem with our primitive understanding. We're always going to have a primitive understanding of how stock investing works until we develop some language that makes sense. And a lot of the terms that are used by the big name experts and many others don't really hold up to scrutiny. And I don't like this practice of talking about bull markets that 1 and 2 year bear markets or bull markets. You know, that is highly confusing. People do this all the time when they're talking about the period from January 2000 forward. They'll say, oh, we had a bear market from 80 to 2003. Then we had a bull market from 2003 to 2007. Then we had a bear market from 2007 to 2009. And these small little jumps in one direction or the other are meaningless for long-term investors. I only write for long-term investors. Nothing that I write has any application to short-term investors. So, if you're a short-term investor, you're in the wrong place. For long-term investors, what the heck difference does it make if there's a one-year drop during a long bull market or if there's a one-year increase during a long bear market? Who the heck cares? We're in it for the long term. So let's talk about secular bull markets and secular bear markets. And when you get to the price levels that applied in January of 2000, we obviously were entering a secular bear market, not a 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 year bear market. We were talking about we were looking forward at that time to the kind of bear market that just wipes you out, where you lose 2/3 of your life savings. So, but people don't realize this. And Ziggy's making a fair point. He's pointing at he's saying look at November of 1980 through August in 82, you get a different picture than if you look from 75 through 82, as DDB did. But I'm seeing the DDB camp on that one. I think you need to look at the longer time period. And DDB's point is, if you were a long-term investor and you held stocks from 75 through 82, you did pretty well. Even though it's generally characterized as part of a bear market, let's pray for more bear markets like the period from 1975 through 1982. I think that's what DDB is saying. He's saying I'd settle for that kind of bear market, a bear market in which my real portfolio value is going up over time. That's the kind of bear market I like. If we don't know the difference between a bear market and a bull market, we need to break open the books and do some homework. And I am persuaded by this thread and by what I learned by looking at Shiller's database that most of today's quote-unquote experts don't understand the difference between a bull market and a bear market. They're talking nonsense when they refer to these things. They don't understand the ABCs of stock investing. I'm not knocking them. We're all in the same boat. What I'm saying is, we all need to strive to do better. We all need to stop acting like big shots and know-it-alls and acknowledge that we don't know a lot of what we once thought we knew and start moving forward with good intent and with a little spirit of humility and a little spirit of openness to other points of view. All right. This guy's name is DBR. That's a little confusing. He's got a similar name, DBR. He says, if one were to fit a piecewise linear curve to this chart, my eyeball says the secular bear flat line and the bull market increasing line intersect pretty close to 1982. The same simple-minded procedure says the bull market ended and the current secular bear flat line began around 2002. That's all my simple-minded curve-fitting brain tells me. All right. I think he's probably getting at why most experts say the bull market began in 82. He's making a legitimate point. They look at these curves and these things. But I think DDB's point is good, that we need to look a little deeper. These curves don't necessarily tell the whole story. Some of them don't look at dividends. Some of them focus on these short-term ups and downs that make no difference to the long-term investor. So we need a new way of thinking about investing. We need new terms, new language, a new openness to insights that haven't been considered before. He's right to point out what the experts might be looking at, but DDB is right to criticize the experts' take, which is not nearly so clearly right as many would lead you to believe. Uncle Mick, he's a guy I posted with on a daily basis back at the Safe Withdrawal Rate Research Group. Uncle Mick says, in response to the question, you know, why do we think this was a bear market from 75-4? But he says, because I read it in a magazine. Reminds me of that Elton John song, Benny and the Jets. You know, he's talking about Benny's mohair suit. And he says, I read it in a magazine. You know, it must be true. That's the level of understanding that most big name experts have about stock investing in Rob Bennett's view. They read something in a magazine and they think it must be true. They read somewhere that, hey, timing doesn't work. I read it in a magazine. It must be true. Must be true. They wouldn't put it in Rolling Stone if it weren't true, would they? Or they wouldn't put it in Money Magazine if it weren't true, would they? Well, maybe they would. That's what I'm starting to think. Maybe they would. Maybe the people who publish Rolling Stone and the people who publish Money Magazine are humans. I'm starting to think. They make mistakes from time to time. I'm slowly coming around to that conclusion, believe it or not. Because I read it in a magazine in the waiting room at the dentist office. It's got to be true, right? That's Uncle Mick. Here's a post by Cloud11. He says, according to DFA, the average real return of the U.S. total market was 5.6% per year between January 75 and August 82. Given that the historical real return average is 6%, I don't think a below average return over a 7.5-year period can be considered part of a secular bull. Well, I disagree with that comment. I see what he's getting at. He's saying the return was less than average. Well, but it's still pretty darn good. You know, 6.5 is the long-term average return, real, 6.5 real. If the real return during that time period was 5.6, that's less than average, but it's still pretty darn good. That's why I'm saying, you know, let's all say a prayer that we can have more bear markets like that horrible bear from 75 to 82. I'll take it. So what's a bull market? What's a bear market? That's really the question on the table here. We all know the numbers. We're all looking at them from different perspectives. What's a bull market? What's a bear market? What's a good return? What's a bad return? DDB again. DDB says, your chart is nominal growth and appears to ignore dividends. Here's a chart I made. See, here's a chart I made a few years ago. Now, you know, see how people get into arguments? They're just, you know, one guy's counting nominal, one guy's counting real, which adjusts for inflation. One guy's counting dividends, one guy's not. You know, how can we ever learn from each other? These aren't the only two people doing this. This is common. I see this from John Bogle. I said that already. But, you know, if the big names can't bring themselves to speak in reasonable, helpful ways, how can the people on discussion boards do it? How can average investors figure this stuff out? He says, my curve fitting mind tells me there was a secular bull from around 41 to 66, a secular bear from around 66 to 75, and a secular bull from around 75 to 99. I realize this is probably just an example of finding patterns in random data, but I still think there's a big difference between saying that the last secular bull lasted 9 years versus saying it lasted 16 years. I don't know where he gets the 9 and 16. If it started in 82, it lasted 18 years. And if it started in 75, you know, it's like 25 years if you go to 2000. But I don't agree at all with the comment where he says this is probably just an example of finding patterns in random data. This ain't random data. Maybe that's what he thinks. If he believes in passive investing, I think he does. He sees this all as random data. This is the big mistake that today's investors and today's investing experts make. They think the common view today, as a result of the passive investing, the popularity of the passive investing model, is, and people believe this. You probably believe it. My listener, dear listener, you probably believe this. People believe that investing returns are just sort of generated by a random number generator in the sky. Who knows what next year's return is going to be? Whoever can tell? That's what they think. And as far as next year's return, that actually is true. That was the great finding of Eugene Fammon, all those people that did the early work on the efficient market theory and the passive investing model. They learned that we cannot predict returns in the short term. And that's where this idea caught on, that all stock returns are just generated by this random number generator in the sky. But that is not true. In the short term, it appears to me to be true that returns are pretty much random. You have no idea what's going to happen next year or in 2 years or in 3 years. But in the long term, they're not random at all. In the long term, stock returns are highly predictable. And that's all the work I do is based on that premise. And that's what Robert Shiller has found, and many, many others, but Shiller's the leader in the field. And that disproves, Shiller's findings disprove the efficient market theory and disprove passive investing. And all the advice that goes with it, which is all the advice you've heard about stock investing for the past 30 years, unless you listen to the 10% that are aware of Shiller's findings and who take those findings seriously, base their strategies on it. Stock returns are not generated by a random number generator in the sky. Stock returns are to a large extent predictable, not in the short term, but in the long term. And so it's very important to know when bull markets begin, and you know when secular bull markets begin and when secular bear markets begin. It's very, very important. That's how you understand stock investing, is by studying how we shift from one long-term cycle to another long-term cycle. You know, if you understand the cycles, then you understood from 1995 forward how dangerous stock investing was because we were at insanely high price levels. If you think returns are just generated by a random number generator in the sky, then, you know, what the heck do you care what the price level is? It makes no difference. And that's how passive investors think. That's the passive investing mindset that I am trying to overcome. Let me see. This is DDB again, and he says, well, using your logic, he's responding to Cloud 11. He says, using your logic, could a 7.5-year period that included a real return very close to the long-term average be considered part of a secular bear? I agree. I said that already, though. A guy, DMCMAHON, I don't know what that name is, says, I think the difference is one of attitude. You are looking for the low point of the secular bear and then looking forward from there. Most people are looking instead at the beginning of the secular bear and eyeballing the end of a long flat period that gets you back to break even versus the entry point. Look at both the 30s bear and the 70s bear. You've picked start years for the bull that had sharp bounces off the bottom, and then yet more years of grinding around going nowhere. Why not, for example, pick 1933 as the start of the next bull, rather than 41? Most of us would look at the early 40s as not a great period to be in stocks based on your chart. Someone exiting the market at the top in 1929 would have been able to climb back in 1949 for the next bull and missed nothing but heartache. Similarly, it looks like you got almost no real return from 1976 through 1982, a long time to earn nothing. Well, this fellow is making points that needed to be put on the table, but I think his thinking is mixed up. He's probably right that a lot of people decide when a bear begins and ends by looking at how long returns have been flat. But I think that's a mistake. He says they look at how long it takes to get back to break even. So, for example, if stocks were selling, you know, at X, at, you know, like they were selling, I don't know, at, 15 months ago, whatever price level they were at, you know, 13,000, I don't know what it was, and we've seen a 50% drop. You know, some people would say, until we get back to 13,000 or whatever the number was, it's a bear market. And then once we go to a higher price, the bear market's over. Well, I think that's foolish. I think that's just wrongheaded. And people did that with the so-called bear of, 2000 through 2003. When we went above the Dow Jones average or the S&P average that we were at in 2003, as we did, in later years, they said, oh, we're at a new high, bear is over. Well, the bear wasn't over. The worst part of the bear was yet to come at that point. This is why you have to look at valuation levels. You know, we're now at Dow around 9,000. Well, we're not, Dow 9,000 in 2008 is not the same as Dow 9,000 in 2000. You know, in the early part of 2000, we were up around 12,000 on the Dow. You can't compare, you can't say, oh, we've only dropped 3,000 since then. We've dropped a whole big bunch more than that. We've dropped 3,000 points, but we've had inflation since then. We've had growth in the economy that you should be earning returns from. And we've had dividends. So you've got to include all those factors. The only way I know to include all those factors is to look at the PE10 level, because all those factors are built in one way or another into the PE10 level. That's why I like PE10 so much. It's a tool for making sense out of this stuff. But if you're just saying, well, when we get to the same level on the Dow that we were at before, everything's hunky-dory, that's sort of, I don't think that makes sense, because you've been losing, your money's been eroded by the effect of inflation over that time. So you haven't gotten back to where you were. On the other hand, you could have a 10-year time period where you stay at the same valuation level and you're making a fantastic return. You know, if you stay at the same valuation level, in order to stay at the same valuation level, you need to be earning a return of somewhere above 6% real. So staying at the same valuation level, having no change in the PE10 level, is good news for stock investors. That's the point I'm trying to make in this calculator I'm trying to develop. I don't know how far it's going to go. I need to run my ideas past John and it may not be viable. But we'll see whether we can make anything out of it. I hope so, but I'm not at all sure. I think it's 50-50 at this point. But there's all sorts of ways to think about this. I think the best way to think about it is to look at the PE10 level. And if you're staying at the same PE10 level, I would say that's good news. And that appears to me to be largely what happened from 75 through 82. In January of 75, the PE10 level was 8.9, essentially 9.9%. And at January of 83, the PE10 level was 8.8, almost identical over those, 8 years. January, it went from 8.9 to 8.8. So there were drops and there were increases mixed in over that time period. But the point is, if you held stocks over that time period, you earned a nice return on your money. That's why I'm inclined to agree with DDB's central point. Now, in response to DDB's point, DMC Mahan comes back and says, DDB had said, using your logic, could a 7.5-year period that included a real return very close to the long-term average be considered part of a secular bear? And the answer came back, I think almost all the return was earned in a bounce off the bear market low, followed by years of further stagnation. Again, if you were lucky enough to buy that bottom, you could have bailed out a year later and missed several more years of heartache. Again, on its face, this is a valid statement, but I think it's a wrong-headed way of looking at things. This poster is looking at things from a short-term perspective. He's saying, oh, you know, if you happen to buy in at the low, you'd do a lot better than if you held for the whole period. That's, of course, true. And people say this to me all the time. When I tell people stocks were at dangerous levels in 2003, and you should have been going with a low stock allocation, they'll say, ha, 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 Rob, from 2003 to 2006, stocks went up. They went up a lot, man. Ha, ha, ha. Nothing dangerous about stocks. Well, they're missing the point. We don't know what's going to happen in 1 year or 2 years or 3 years. You're going to get these little ups. Then you're going to get crushed in the price crash that follows. So what good did it do you? If you're a short-term timer and you timed it, you know, you got in at the bottom in 2003, got out at the top in 2006, well, hooray for you. But I don't know how to do that. And you know, my friend John Bogle is the one who taught me that. Short-term timing doesn't work. So I don't even try. But if you got in at 2003 thinking the long-term value proposition was good, you don't understand the ABCs of investing. Because valuation levels told you in 2003 that the valuation level was poor. We were in the red alert danger zone. We were over 20. Those who understand stock market history knew a huge price crash was on its way. And now it has come. So, yeah, you earned these gains and you enjoyed them for a couple years. And then you suffered a wipeout. What good is that? People are looking at these questions from the wrong perspective. But it's sure good to discuss them, because that's how we learn. It's sure good to discuss the different viewpoints. Who is this? Let me see. Who is this comment? DDB again. And he says, yeah, I guess it's all perception, and I'm sure none of it matters anyway. Well, I disagree with that. I think it matters a great deal. Still, I strongly contend that a 7-year period with real returns of over 5% per year preceding the commonly accepted start of the 80s, 90s secular bull doesn't make much sense. I'm glad the guy stuck to his guns enough to say that, because a 7-year period with returns of over 5% real is a good time period to hold stocks, in this boy's opinion. I think DDB should stick to his guns. He's got it more right than wrong. Retired at 48 says, in trying to answer, I think, the question in the thread starter, because people in real time tend to look backward at where the market was to form conclusions. I experienced the time period when in about 1966, the Dow average hit 1,000. It didn't cross this and go up until the early 1980s. So this 16-year flat period was met with a sigh of relief that the Dow was finally going higher, that the bull market was underway. Just a viewpoint. I think retired at 48 is exactly right. I think that's why it's become conventional wisdom that 82 was the beginning of the bull. People are looking at the fact that the Dow dropped from 1966 and didn't get back until 82, but that's a wrong-headed way of thinking about it in Rob Bennett's opinion. I think DDB has the right way of thinking about it. What were your returns if you held stocks for the long term? 75 through 82 was a good time to hold stocks. I think he's right. The fact that the Dow was lower, who cares? You weren't making your money by gains in the index. That's the point. You were making your money from dividends. So what? It's still money. It still counts. Two-thirds of your returns are going to be from dividends if you're a long-term investor. So we need to pay more attention to dividends and less to the nominal price change. Cloud 11 says, according to DFA, the U.S. total market average real return between October 76 and August 82 was a negative 0.02% per year. Now, here's where you get into, you know, we're having a conflict about the numbers. But my guess is that's not counting dividends. See, that's the problem. If he's not counting dividends, we're never going to be able to make sense out of it because the numbers just don't match. A six-year period of zero real returns would definitely not be considered part of a secular bull. Then he says, DCM McMahon above had a good point. Almost all the return during the 75 to 82 period was earned in 75-76 alone. If you look at the 82-99 period, you won't find a six-year period or even a four-year period with zero real annualized returns. Well, I stand to be corrected if I'm wrong on this, but I think the mistake here is he's not counting dividends. And if you're not counting dividends, you're talking nonsense as far as I'm concerned. So I don't think there's any intentional. He's not trying to mislead anybody. He's just not used to thinking about dividends being part of the equation. But that's a terrible, terrible, terrible mistake that many big-name experts make. So I don't blame the guy. But we can't make sense out of this question unless we use the same language. And if you don't count dividends, you're talking a different language. DDB comes back. Let's see. No, this isn't DDB. This is who? Let me see. This is DBR. DBR comes back and says, after in response to DDB's comment that you need to count dividends, well, sure, that's part of the point. You can make these bear bull assessments any way you want and dispute any one answer in favor of any other answer, and what would be the point? I guess you are really asking why the quote industry or the quote experts make some statement or another, and surely neither your eyeball or mine can account for what quote they want to say. I admit my contribution was not helpful to elucidating what the rationale for the standard statement is. Well, I don't know. It may be he's getting a little defensive there, but he's quite right that there's all this confusion, but it's important. The point is important. If you want to know when to go with a high stock allocation and when to go with a low stock allocation, you need to know what sort of time period stocks do well in and what sort of time period stocks do poorly in. And the PE10 tool tells you in 75, in January 75, the PE10 level was 9. That's an outstanding, amazing PE10 level. You should be expecting good, exceedingly good long-term returns from that point forward. And we have been taught by the quote-unquote experts that we didn't start getting those good returns till 7 years later. What DDB is telling us is that's all wrong. You started getting good returns in January 75, 7 years earlier than most people thought. That has big implications for investors today. Some people today are thinking, we're at fair value. Well, the stock market may fall another 50%, and well, it might. But that doesn't mean you should be waiting until it does so to get into stocks. It might not fall another 50%. We might stay at this price, this valuation level for many years to come. And people may look back and say, oh, this was part of the bear market. But if you were earning 5% real, 6% real during that time period, 6-7 years, if you're smart, you want to be in stocks during such a time period. That's DDB's point. And it's a well-taken point, in my opinion. Let me see here. Let me see how much time I have. This is a comment from Rosencotter. Let me see what this comment is. I'm jiggling different screens here as I talk, so my multitasking skills are being pressed to the limit. He says, like someone else said, you're starting from the bottom of the 73, 74, 50% drop. Most people look at the Dow. It was around 966. It was around 982. In between, it went below and above 900 many times. After 82, it never tested that low again and began a sustained bull market. The guy's hitting it right on the head as to how this conventional quote-unquote wisdom was formed. It seems clear to me after reading this thread, the reason people think the bull market started in 82 is that people are looking at the Dow number. And the Dow number dropped below 1,000, and it didn't go above until 82. And I say that's nonsense. I don't care where the Dow is. I care what kind of return I got. And DDB is telling us, if you count dividends, the return was around 5% real or something a little more than that. And that's a darn good return. It's more a bull market than it is a bear market. The PE10 level in January of 75 was telling us something important. It was telling us, get into stocks now, buddy. Don't wait around until the Dow hits 1,000 7 years from now. You're going to be missing out on good returns if you do. Then he adds, this comment, this poster in Fairness adds, I understand your way of thinking, though. From 1975 to 1982, it was mostly up. Kind of like today. I like this comment. I'm thinking we'll slowly get back to Dow 12,000 over the next 5-8 years, probably going above, then back down again a couple of times, and then finally busting out in a new bull market that never goes below 12,000 again. But looking back in 30 years, one could say that starting from 2008, 7,500 to 12,000 in 2013 looks like a sustained bull market to them, even though it may end up being very choppy for us living through it. I think this guy is right on. You know, this is relevant to today. I don't know whether we're going to see a 50% price drop or not. If you had asked me 15 months ago, are we going to see a 50% price drop? I would say absolutely yes. The odds were overwhelming that we were going to see a huge price crash. Those valuation levels that applied from 1995 through the first part of 2008 were insane. That ain't true today. Today, the valuation levels are not low. It's not true when people tell you these are fire sale prices. That's nonsense. But they're fair. And stocks offer a strong long-term value proposition starting from fair prices. So I think it's smart to leave a little bit off the table at today's prices. You want to have some additional money to put in if we get down to a PE10 level of 9 as we did in 1975. Because those returns, you know, you don't even want to think about how great they're going to be. Just think about it. From 75 through 2000, you had a bull market. 25 years. 25 years of rising prices. And you don't need rising prices. Rising valuation levels. Not just rising prices. The valuation level from January 75 through 2000 went up 600%. Went up 6 times. And if the valuation level stays stable, you get a real return of 6% a year. Holy smokes. So I would hold something off the table to put into stocks if we get down to a 9 PE10 level, but I wouldn't be holding it all on the table, not if you're a rational investor. I would be we may not ever get down to 9, and you don't if we stay 7 years at a PE10 level of 15 where we are today, you want to have a significant amount of your money in stocks. That's the point this guy's making. This is relevant to today's market. This is important stuff. This is serious stuff. We're near the end of the bogleheads.org thread. I want to look at a few last comments. Let me see here. Retired at 48. Retired at 48 says, perhaps it's the effect of small numbers in the log versus linear charts. Well, I think the bigger factor is the dividend factor. I think that's what's causing much of the confusion. CJ King makes a good comment. He says, maybe with hindsight, bottoms and tops should be assigned to extremes of valuation. Yes, 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 yes. The bottom of the bear market is when the PE10 level is at rock bottom, and the top of the bull market is when the PE10 level is at extreme highs. And so the top of the last bull market was January 2000. That was an insane valuation level of 44. I mean, it goes beyond insane. You got to say insane times I don't know what, but I don't, I, the calling the bottom of the bear market, the bottom of the bear market, I don't think was January of 75. See, January of 75, the PE 10 level was 8.9. Let's call it nine. In January of 82, it was 7.4. So 7.4 is the bottom. So going by that logic, it does make sense to say that the bull market started in 1982. So I may continue to say that. I don't know. I have to think about it some more. I'm leaning towards, when I give a short description of where the bull market started, I'm going to continue to use 82. And when I go into a little longer description, I'm going to point out that you could have gone back to 75 and still had good returns for 7 years. Because I think both ways of looking at it are at least somewhat legitimate. The bottom in the P10 level really is in January of 82, 7.4. That's the one where you went up 600% when you go to January of 2000. But you see, there was a little bit of a short bear market there from January 81 to 82. In that 1 year, we fell from 9.3 P10 level to 7.4. Now that's 2 percentage points of 2 points of P10. Now 2 points of P10 doesn't mean much when you're at 26 and you drop to 24, and that's what we're accustomed to. That's where we've been, from 95 through the first part of 2008. So that's how we tend to think about this stuff, and we think, oh, 2 points isn't that much. When you're going from 9.3 to 7.4, though, 2 points means a lot. And so there was a bit, there was a short-term bear there from January 81 through 82. And so we didn't really turn the corner until January of 82. So I see what people are getting at when they use that as their cutoff point. But DDB's comment, all the same, is a very good point. The PE 10 level in January of 75 was 9. And we went down to 7.4, but that's over, in January of 82, that's 7 years later. So we saw a little drop. If we hold to the same PE 10 level, you're earning 6% real a year. So if we only see, that drop is a little more than it looks like because the numbers are smaller than what we're accustomed to. So it's a significant drop. But over 7 years, it's not that big a deal. And the compensating factor is you're earning that 6% real every year if the valuation level just stays the same. So the net effect is, it seems to me, you were earning a pretty good return. I think DDB is right that if you look at the dividends, which you've got to look at dividends, it's just wrong to exclude dividends. If you look at dividends, it was a good time to hold stocks from January 75 through January of 82. Why not tell people that? If you're going to call that a bear market, you're making people feel like it was a bad time to own stocks. And I think what DDB is trying to say is it was a good time to hold stocks. I think the guy's right on. If I'm wrong, I hope someone corrects me. I never have full confidence when I'm giving numbers. And so, John, Walter Russell, please step in if I've got this wrong, or if you can clarify and add something to the discussion, please do. And if anyone else out there can add something. But I'm going to read, to wrap up here, I'm going to read the PE10 levels that applied from January 75 through January of 86, because I think that gives us the perspective that we need. January of 75, we were at a 9. January of 76, we were at 11. So that was a great year. You get a 6% real return if you stay at the same PE10 level. If you go up, you obviously get more than 6%. And 9 to 11 doesn't sound like much, but it means a lot more at those low levels. So that was a big rise. Plus, we had very high dividend levels in those days. January of 77, we went to 11.4, so that's stable. January of 78, 9.2. That's a little down, but still higher than January of 75. So from 75 through 78, you've still got your 6% real coming in. From January of 79, we're at 9.3, tiny increase in the P10 level. January of 80, 8.8, small drop. January of 81, nice 9.3, you know, reasonable increase. January of 82, 7.4, that's a significant drop. That was a bad year. But there's no way to know when the bad years are coming. So the only way you could take advantage of all those good years was to be willing to take the hit in that one bad year. And I sure think it's worth it. DDB sure thinks it's worth it. January of 83, we're back up to 8.8 again. You only sustained that loss for 1 year. This is a point I make all the time when I tell people not to engage in passive investing. People say, stocks are risky. You know, if you say, oh, it's a bad thing to live through the kind of crash people are living through today. You know, people have lost 50% of their life savings. This is a disaster. And the people trying to defend passive investing, I don't think it's defensible. The people that try to defend it say, oh, you've got to be willing to put up with the risk of stocks. The heck you do. We don't see massive price crashes like the kind we've just lived through when you're at a P10 level of 8.9 or 11.2 or 8.8 or 7.4. None of the P10 levels we're talking about here are P10 levels where you're going to have a massive price crash. It doesn't happen. Massive price crashes happen when you go above 20. Certainly when you go above 25, as we did in 1995, and we stayed above 20 all the way through the first part of 2008. So yes, if you're going to invest in stocks heavily at times of insane price levels, it's true. Stocks are the most dangerous investment class imaginable. They're 10 times more risky than most people realize. It's frightening how risky they are. They'll wipe you out. But that's not true at the price levels that DDB is talking about. These sorts of you of course can see price drops at any P10 level. So we saw a drop from 9.3 to 7.4. Well, whoop-de-doo. It lasted all of 1 year. So what? If you can't take a loss for 1 year, you don't belong in stocks. End of sentence. End of paragraph. End of chapter. End of story. If you can't take that kind of risk, you don't belong in stocks. But if you can take that kind of risk, if you can be a long-term investor and you're not going to freak out over a loss of 1 or 2 or 3 years, then you should have been in stocks starting in January 75, not starting in 1982, from what I'm seeing in the data here and what DDB is seeing and what DDD brought to my attention. Thank you, DDB, for teaching me something important about stock investing that I did not know. Thank you for helping me not to get it wrong in the future, because I'm going to be making this point again. This is important. I'm not sure about whether I'm going to say the bull market began in 82 or 75. I'm just not sure. I have to think about that one some more. It's a hard call, I think. There's arguments both ways. 82 was the low. That 7.4 P10 level was the low. But stocks, it appears to me, were a good long-term value proposition from 75 forward. Not just in theory. They were a good long-term proposition in fact. You know, we have the records of what happened. These people earned good returns. Is that not so? If it's not so, someone please correct me. And I'll do a follow-up podcast saying I was wrong again. I was wrong about being wrong. But what I'm looking at tells me that DDB is right, and all the confusion stems from people not counting valuations, which is just scandalous. In this day and age, with middle-class investors having their life savings tied up in stocks, that big-name experts don't know enough to adjust for valuations and don't know enough to adjust for dividends. This is a... I'm no stock expert. I'm a reporter. It took me to come along and find this out. Money Magazine couldn't figure this out with all their resources. It makes me want to cry sometimes. I shouldn't be able to record a podcast like this when it should not be possible for someone who came on the scene in May of 2002, knowing no more about stock investing than your average person. You know, I read a few books. And here I am correcting big name, big shot money experts earning millions of dollars per year. And they're wrong about the ABCs. My take on this is DDB is more right than wrong. And that's a shameful commentary on the level of investing advice we've become accustomed to hearing over the past 30 years, the passive investing era. I'm not impressed. I love these people. I've learned from them just as I've learned from DDB, and that's not going to change. Once you learn something, you've learned it, and you can't forget it. And I've learned important things from Bill Bernstein. I've learned important things from John Bogle. I've learned important things from Scott Burns. And I'm not forgetting it anytime soon. But DDB shouldn't be able to play in their league, and he is playing in their league. He's hitting line drives, and they're striking out on this particular question. So January of 82, we were down at 7.4, the low. And then January of 83, back up to 8.8. Nice recovery in 1 year. You see, you can suffer price drops, even at low valuation levels, but they don't hang around long. It's a short-term thing. January of 84, 9.9. Another nice pickup. January of 85, 9.9. Stable, no pickup, but that means a 6% real return. I can live with that. January of 86, 11.7. Another nice pickup. And you've got years and years and years of nice pickups to come. All the way up to January of 2000. Now, in January of 95, it got dangerous. So if you're a rational investor, you didn't wait to January of 2000 to lower your stock allocation. If you're a rational investor, you lowered it probably in 95. If not in 95, certainly in 96, when we got to like 26, which is, you know, insane times two. But the rational investor would have gotten into stocks in January 75 and enjoyed a huge ride up until 95. 20 years of outstanding returns, and then when stocks got too dangerous for the rational investor, he would have lowered his allocation to 20 or 30% until the early part of 2008. He would have avoided the price crash. He obviously would have missed out, in quotes, the insane super bubble of 96 through 99. But he also would have missed the price crash that inevitably follows such a super bubble. And he'd be way, 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 way ahead of the game today. So the question in my mind that DDB was putting on the table is, should a smart investor wish that he had gotten in 82 or 75? And I think DDB is right, that the smart investor would have wanted to get in 82. I'm sorry, in 75. But the more important question is, we don't know what we think we know. We need to get back to basics. I've said in earlier podcasts, we don't want to hang these people from a tree, these people that got it wrong. You know, everyone makes mistakes. They're trying. They've offered good insights. But the other side of the story is, you know, passive investing was the product of some important breakthroughs. The last 30 years have shown the efficient market theory to be wrong, passive investing to be discredited. Let's give that up. Let's start looking fresh. And here's another point about the thread. I've already made some other points that, you know, you learn so much from discussion boards. You learn so much when we look at the basic questions. You learn so much when we drop the pose of knowing it all. The other point is we learn so much when we get different perspectives. I love this thread because you've got different people coming at it from different angles. Nobody yelling, nobody threatening to kill anybody, you know, nobody threatening to ban anybody from the board because they said something that made their tummy hurt. That's how we learn. Even, you know, there's some posters on there that said things that I don't think are quite right, but they said it with good intent. They're trying to help us learn. They're trying to understand. That's how we all learn. We need, you know, I ain't no passive investor, but I acknowledge that we need passive investors in the discussion. DDB, I believe, is a passive investor. I'm pretty sure. I'm not certain, but I'm pretty sure. But look what I learned from them. You know, I could have taken a vow when the Bogleheads.org board banned me. I could have said, I'm not going to look at Bogleheads.org. They were mean to me. Mommy, they were mean. Fine. So I'd be dumber today than I would be dumber than I've managed to become on my own skill. My own batteries. DDB made me smarter with that post. I don't care if he's a passive investor, a rational investor, a short-term timer, a long-term timer, a no-time timer, or the man from the moon. I don't care. If he teaches me something I didn't know before, I owe the guy a debt of gratitude. Thank you, DDB. Thank you, all posters who participated on the thread. Thank you, Robert Shiller, for the database I used to try to make sense out of the thread. Thank you, Robert Shiller, for the book that told me what I needed to know to apply that database in a useful way. Thank you, John Bogle, for getting me on the right path. This is how it's done, people. I enjoyed the thread. I hope I said something of some value in the podcast. I hope you'll listen to other podcasts, and please let me know when I make further mistakes. I was wrong in thinking the bull market started in 1982. I've learned. I hope I've learned something. And I hope that I'll be learning more in days to come. I hope I'll be getting some emails of people telling me that I'm wrong about stuff. Good luck on your investing strategies. You take care.